What are you saying?
I take it Derek Johnson was talking about something then.
Derek Johnson?
Aye, who you talking? Oh, Derek McInnes, sir.
Aye.
Right, I'm getting mixed up my Derek's here. Too many fucking Derek's about the place.
I think you should change your name to Bob. You thought it was you that he was talking about, and then you thought it was Derek Johnson.
Too many fucking Derek's. I'm Derek, he's retweeted a podcast, Derek. He had an argument with Derek Johnson. What can
oh my God.
You like your rustling about, don't you?
Sorry, mate, sorry. When you go. Right, well, you just want to get fired on then.
Alright, but what about the pod?
Oh,
I've used that one before.
About 3,000 times before. How funny is that?
Why did they wait fucking 3 days to reply to that? Next thing I want to talk about. Oh, 2 seconds, I'm getting my tea delivery.
Sounds like a bucket of tea you're getting there.
A bucket of tea, you said?
Aye, that's what it sounded like there.
I wish it was.
Crash, bang, wallop.
What a video.
Exactly.
You've not seen Alan Partridge, that'll make no sense.
No, it doesn't.
Hi folks, and welcome to episode 11 of season 4 of the iReady podcast. Yes, it's been a while again, but that's what happens with us, as you know. As ever, I'm your host Derek, and with me is my co-host Dave.
Derek, how are you this evening?
I'm very well, yourself?
Oh, I'm absolutely ecstatic, because just 5 minutes before we started recording, you actually got a reply, or it wasn't really a reply, it was more of a sort of cheeky retweet from one of your best pals in the mainstream sports media, and ex-Celtic player Chris Sutton.
All right.
Basically trying to be a smart arse by retweeting something that you had put on about Aberdeen, basically just because their manager's turned down the Sunderland job, and he's going through everybody on Twitter who made a comment about it, because he's obviously either bored or he's still quite pissed off that there's people answering back on Twitter and things like that. But I thought it was quite amusing. I've quoted the tweet that he's put up just to let everybody see, but I did think it was quite funny. I asked him if he wanted a wee mention in the pod tonight, but he's never go back to me, so I was just being friendly, you know. But
kind of done it by proxy now anyway, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, apart from that, Derek, I'm still recovering. As you know, and I've told a few people, I've been in and out of hospital quite a lot over the last few months. I had to go in for another procedure last week, so I'm basically bored in the house, sort of housebound just now. So I've actually done quite a lot of work, and the good thing is that I've been sitting every day on Twitter just waiting for wee snippets of photos from Willie Vass coming out when he's at the, you know, the airports and stuff like that, just to see if we're signing it in anybody else. But it's been quite exciting so far.
Yeah, it's been good. So
yes.
So I take it, you know, your surgeries went well then, in terms of you know, you've now got a set of boobs and a fanny.
I thought you said we weren't going to mention Chris Sutton anymore.
Well played, well played. But yes, we've got a few games to cover. We're not going to go delve into deep about them, because, you know, they're done and dusted. We're looking forward now, but we'll start off anyway. We'll go down the tunnel and onto the pitch.
Hey!
I'm getting better.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, As I said, I'm not going to really cover the games in great depth, just a couple of talking points. First game we have got to cover, Sunday the 7th of May, it was a 2-1 win away to Partick Thistle. Partick opened the score in the 14th minute, Mackay scored on the 83rd minute, and Gardner popped up with a goal in the 94th minute, and it sent the place into raptures. Celebrations at the end, Kashina going mad, we were going mad at home, potentially a wee bit too exuberant by fans running onto the park at the end, but... Yep. Mm-hmm. We'll let them have that anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, it's been a dire season, Derek. So really, when you score for the second time, lightning does strike twice against Partick Thistle, they're going to be totally pissed off with us. But what's the problem if you score a winner? And we didn't play particularly well, Derek, in the game. And then to score that right at the end again. So what if everybody was on jumping about and stuff like that? The fans are there to enjoy themselves. Nobody got hurt, there was nothing sinister in it, but as usual, because it's us and it's our fans, everything's blown completely out of proportion. But no, I'm with you, let the fans have it, they've paid their money to go and watch it, and as you say, we were all going daft as well when we scored the goal at the end. So.
Yep. Next game was Saturday the 13th of May, it was a 2-1 win at home to Hearts. Gardner opened the scoring on the 6th minute, Hearts had a straight red card on the 26th minute, it was obvious, I think it was, if I can remember right, was that long ago? Hearts equalised on the 51st minute, and then Mackay scored 2 minutes later on the 53rd minute. Next game was a big game. We thought, given what would happened in the 3-0 victory away to them in the last game, we're going to play well against them. But, oh, how wrong were we? Wednesday the 17th of May, it was a 2-1 loss at home to Aberdeen. I was about six pints deep at that point when I seen the game, and I kind of done something that I very, very rarely do, is I actually left. I became part of the Subway Loyal. I did get an early train, but I think it was justified because...
Now, Derek, your legendary weak bladder, you're saying that you had six pints. Just admit it, you only saw about 5 minutes a game because you were going back and forth to the toilet every 5 minutes.
Only once at half time and once during the game. So I was
really?
And then once when I left as well.
I take it you were in absolute agony when you were watching it, yeah?
Aye, that was just my eyes watching how bad we were. But, anyway, Aberdeen scored in the 9th minute. They scored in the 51st minute. And then Waghorn pulled a good goal back, actually, from him on the 61st minute. And apparently the Aberdeen player got a red card in the 90th minute. I can't remember that, to be honest. So,
it was a poor performance, Derek. I'm briefly going to go over it. We played absolutely shocking in the first half. And then he changed it about and he brought Burn-Jones into midfield. And I thought he was outstanding, and we were actually quite unlucky at the end to know he at least got a draw out of it because of Barjonas and Bierman as well, who were excellent when, the two of them got on, especially in the second half. The rest of the team were dire. The two young laddies at the back were okay, but the rest of the team were shocking. But Barjonas was really good.
Yep, certainly that was a good thing that came from that. I think Aidan Wilson got a first game as well for us. So Aidan Wilson, Jamie Barjonas, or Barjonas, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think everybody doesn't know how to pronounce it yet. as you said, Bierman played fairly well.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, before the game, there was the wee usual tete-a-tete between the managers, usual war of words that happened before the game. Pedro quite rightly said, football's in cycles, and, Aberdeen are likely to lose six or seven of their top players in their summer. Obviously, turned out
which
to be
is true. But, yep.
Well, it turned out to be right, wasn't it?
As
usual, what does Derek McInnes have to say? Have a pop at us for that. And then he spent the next minute odd of his own press conference talking about us when he's just said that Pedro should talk about his own team, not us. So.
Well, Derek, he's a fellow blue nose like us, and that's what we talk about.
Well, exactly, aye. it didn't stop there. You could see them arguing on the touchline, towards the end of the game, and Pedro came out afterwards claiming that McInnes had showed no respect in the last game because McInnes had Pedro waiting in his manager's office for 15 minutes without any turning up. So he turned around and said that, no, I'm not having a drink with you in my manager's office, so bugger off, basically. So, but... Apparently, it's all been water under the bridge now. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yep. Going into the last game of the season, Sunday the 21st of May, it was a 2-1 win away to St Johnstone. Miller scored in the 40th, Torral scored a good goal on the 53rd, and we make it hard for ourselves again. St Johnstone scored on the 76th minute. At the end of the game, Pedro spent some time with the fans, quite rightly so, you know, even partook in a wee bit of the bouncy as well.
No, Derek, he was celebrating Rangers getting third place,
enough. I'm stand corrected there.
What a lot of bollocks.
Because slaughtered again in the press, you know, said it was absolutely ludicrous he was going over and doing that. You know, but they failed to mention that the multiple pictures of him, you know, getting pictures taken with disabled fans and fans in wheelchairs and things like that. Anything they can do to paint them in bad light.
The only time that this is going to happen, Derek, Tom English actually put a wee tweet on saying that he agreed with the Rangers fans that there was nothing to do with celebrating. He got caught up in the moment. He was going round basically thanking all the fans for turning up, and they all sort of jumped in about him, and everybody was jumping about, and he just sort of got caught up in the moment as well. So it'd be fair to Tom English, and as I say, I doubt I'll ever say that ever again about Tom English. He actually said that as well. But as I say, the media it's pathetic, Derek, but we've said it thousands of times now, so you just have to ignore everything that gets said. But he certainly wasn't celebrating us being third. He was basically just having a jump about with the supporters and stuff like that, which again is fair enough. At least he took the time to go around all the fans, and as you say, went around and spoke to a lot of disabled supporters as well, which was a nice touch. And just a lot of rubbish for the media, it really is.
Yep. So the table finished up, played 38, won 19, drew 10, lost 9, scored 56, conceded 44, goal difference of plus 12, points 67, which for some reason the Celtic fans were like, oh, they finished on 67 points, wow, mm-hmm. Oh, the Lisbon Light, fuck off. It was a fucking number.
Was that your impersonation, Derek?
Aye, pretty much.
That'll be you, public enemy number exactly. One. I hope Chris Sutton is the listener to that.
Anyway, we finished in third, 9 points behind Aberdeen, 39 behind Celtic, and 9 ahead of St Johnstone. How would you say the season was then?
Derek, it was very poor. I think we all had high hopes at the start of the season, especially with the players that we brought in. Now, let's be honest, the three top players that were brought in for us, the players that we thought were going to be our main performers, were Nico Cranchar, Jordan Rossiter and Joey Barton. We've went over the Joey Barton thing before. That was an absolute nightmare. We had our doubts at the start of the season, but we were very supportive as we are. That turned out to be a disaster. Jordan Rossiter, highly rated England under 20 captain in midfield, played right at the start of the season. We thought this guy's going to be a class act. He then gets a horrendous injury. We don't see him again. And then our other top player that we brought in was Nico Cranchar, again, who we thought was going to be our main player for us. He gets a bad injury and he's out as well. So two bad injuries to two of our main players, and obviously Barton. The defence was shocking. A lot of turmoil. You know, I think I can maybe count in one hand the amount of decent games that we had all season. It certainly was very poor stuff, and stuff that we all could see quite clearly that was going wrong. But obviously the old manager is away, we've got the new gaffer in, and certainly on paper the games that he's had, we can see that he is trying to put his stamp on the team. He's trying to change things. So again, I'm hopeful, Derek. I'm trying to keep an open mind, but certainly last season was poor, with an odd few games that some of the players decided to turn up. And really the only sort of plus point for us was the form of Kenny Miller. If it hadn't have been for him, we would have been absolutely fucked.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a hard one to really judge fairly, because it's the first season back. As I've said before, is I think every Rangers fan, including my own, was thinking on the back of the semi-final against Celtic. Celtic have undoubtedly massively improved, even with just the players that stayed there. You can't take into account what they've done this year. I still don't think they're as good as everybody makes out, but they're certainly a lot better than I gave them credit for. The only way for them is really down, isn't it? Because they'll not have an unbeaten season again.
I think I've spoke to quite a few Celtic fans that I know, and you know they're going on about their team and all that, but I think we really have to concentrate on our team. And it's even, you know, the, you take all the Celtic games out of it, it wasn't it the set? I mean, if we had to go beat the four games against Celtic, we would have been 12 points behind them if they'd have won all their matches and stuff. It wasn't the games, it was the games against Dundee and the games against St Johnstone and Aberdeen and Hearts away. And, you know, we had a pretty poor season. And I know you're saying that it's our first time, you know, back in the league again, but we have got a huge, compared to the rest of the teams, a huge wage, you know, they hand out to players. You know, we've got the second biggest wage budget there is. I think if we, the manager at the start of the season, had been a hell of a lot more wise with the players that he'd brought in and sorted out the defence, we would have been, you know, a lot better off, but it didn't happen. So I think it was a poor season by our standards. And as I say, bright spot for me was Kenny Miller. I thought he was absolutely outstanding. But that's it. It's now finished, Derek, and we need to look forward. And certainly, again, I'm quite hopeful that, you know, we'll be a hell of a lot better. And I think that Cassinha has got a good idea of how we should be playing. And certainly going by what he's done early on, it looks as if he's going to be shaping the team pretty well for next year.
Yeah. So on that note, Dave, look at the players we've got brought in.
Whoa, right, Derek, here we go. First of all, fantastic signing. I don't know about you, Derek, but, you know, he's obviously going for players that he knows, which is fine. You know, 90% of managers out there, when they move to another club, they bring in players that they know. So, I mean, this whole thing with the media again, he's, and there's a lot of fans as well I've been annoyed with, Derek. They were talking about Mark Warburton coming in and, you know, the players that he signed and, you know, all the alleged stories about the agents that they used and the agencies that they used as well, that there was supposed to be links and stuff like that. But I'm not going to get into that, but a lot of people have been saying, oh, he's doing the same thing, and these players, how do we know they're any good and stuff like that? So I thought to myself, with the amount of Portuguese players that he's brought in already, I mean, he's signed four Portuguese players already, and I'd seen a few quotes and tweets by some guys that do the Portuguese football podcast. It's the PT Footy podcast. And I sent them just a wee note just saying, you know, do you know much about the players that we've brought in? And the guys were good enough to get back to me, and they gave me a wee sort of summary on some of the players that we've brought in. But you start off, first of all, Derek, with Bruno Alves. I mean, what more? You didn't really have to say much more about this guy. He's an absolute, he's a top player. Current Portugal international, playing for them at the moment in their Confederations Cup team. He played in the last World Cup qualifier. He is 35 years old, Derek. That's the only thing, is his age. But at the same time, if he comes up and does what Davy Weir did for us when he was 35, I'll be absolutely delighted. Yeah. And considering he's still playing in international football at the moment, he was playing in the Serie A last season, and I've got a list of all of his, you know, his medals and things that he's won over the years. The guy is an absolute class act.
I mean, I'm never going to say about a guy's age in a negative way again, because mm-hmm. I think we've been proven wrong quite a few times.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not one for the future. You're not going to get, you know, 5 years out of him, but it's certainly one that's going to instill the experience in the youngsters in the squad, and also, you know, do a good turn, well, hopefully anyway, at the same time.
Well, I mean, Derek, you just look at the credentials the guy's got. He's got 90-plus caps for Portugal. Obviously, he won the European Championships of Portugal last year. Now, I know he only played in one of the games, but he still played in one of the games, and it was probably their best result when they beat Wales in the semi-final, you know, because the rest of the games, they basically, you know, they drew the vast majority of their matches and went through in penalties and stuff like that. So
it's a bit like us when we got to the UEFA Cup final,
exactly,
isn't it?
But, I mean, he's won league titles with Fenerbahce. He won four league titles with Porto. He won two league titles with Zenit St. Petersburg. And he's basically won all the cup competitions with all of those teams that he played for. There's loads of statistics going about Derek that I've been reading. I don't know how many of them are true, but apparently he won the second highest amount of defensive headers in the Serie A last season. So he's obviously fantastic in the air, which is what we have been missing. And I don't know if you've seen the picture recently that I retweeted when he was with Ronaldo and the other players, and they got off the plane. I mean, his arms are like they were about the size of him and Ronaldo's waist. I mean, the guy is an absolute tank. He looks totally menacing. Quite a fucking scary looking guy. I think he's going to be a top-notch player for us, Derek. We just have to touch wood, and I didn't want to tempt fate or anything, but just have to hope that he comes through the Confederations Cup completely unscathed, ready to play for us. So, but I mean, I'm delighted with that signing. I think that's fantastic. We've got him in a free transfer. Obviously, Pedro Caixinha and Pedro Mendes there, because he's his agent, has worked well for us, which is fantastic. Now, moving on to the next player that we've signed, and a player that I think that we should be quite excited about as well, is Fabio Cardoso, also a centre-half. He's only 23 years old. Now, he is a Benfica player. He played with Benfica Youth up to the B squad. He's had numerous under-20 caps for Portugal. He was on loan to Paços Ferreira 2005, and then to Vitória, and then we've signed him from there for $1.2 million. Now, he played 27 games last season, and the guys from the PT Footy podcast, who the guy's a Benfica supporter, he's basically told us that this guy is an absolute steal at $1.2 million. He says he's a fantastic player with a knack for scoring goals. He really wished that Benfica had kept him. He says he's solid defender and one of the highest prospects for the national team. So, these guys still young, and he thinks that all the players that we've signed is by far the best player that we've signed, and that's including Alves. So this guy rates him extremely highly, so I was delighted when I saw that. But straight away, that's Caixinha went out. He's obviously seen the problems that we had last season in defence, and he signed two defenders straight away.
Yep.
Now, the first player that he signed that I'm really pleased about as well, Derek, was Ryan Jack, Aberdeen captain. There was a lot of speculation for a while saying that he was signing for us. He finally did. 25 years old, centre midfielder. He's been capped for Scotland under 21. He made 39 appearances last season for Aberdeen. Only scored two goals, but I think he's your sort of more your box to box type midfielder. Your sort of classic box to box midfielder. His main attributes were basically his passing and his tackling, but. I'm not going to big up Aberdeen, but for this guy to be named their captain, and we've went out and signed him on a free transfer as well, I think that's a fantastic bit of business there. I don't know what you think about him, Derek. I didn't really see much of him last season, apart from the games that he played against us, where he certainly looked a good player, and the odd time that there's been a game live. I did watch the Scottish Cup final. I thought he had a brilliant game in the Cup final for Aberdeen.
I thought he bossed the game, eh?
Aye, he was really good, so... the next player that we have signed as well is Daniel Candias.
Turn that sumbitch sideways and stick it straight up your Candias!
Who is a 29-year-old winger. Now, this guy, this is the one of the players I'm not quite sure about, Derek, but going by the list of clubs that he's played for, the vast majority have been on loan. He's played for some half-decent teams here. He's played in some half-decent leagues as well. Now, he started off, as I say, he's 29-year-old. He's got caps for Portugal under-21 and under-23. He was a Porto youth player, but he's basically been out on loan to loads of clubs. He's been on loan to Rio Avenue. He's been on loan to Huelva in Spain. He's been on loan at Paços Ferreira. Nacional, who actually bought him in 2010. That's when he played his best football, apparently. And I think that's when Pedro Caixinha knew him at the time when he was playing for Nacional. He then was bought by Benfica in 2014, but never actually played for him. He went straight out on loan to Nuremberg in Germany, Granada in Spain, Metz in France, and then Allianz Spor in Turkey. last season. Apparently, he was very good. And again, we've heard all these statistics about him, but apparently, he was made maybe the second highest amount of crosses into the box than any other. I think the player that beat him to it was the other Portuguese winger. His name completely goes from my head now. He plays for the national team. I'll come back to me anyway. So he's apparently played quite well in the Turkish League last season, and then of course we have signed him for £700,000. Now, according to the guys at the Portuguese podcast, he says that his ability to play in both wings, great crosser of the ball, good finisher, won't set the world on light, but was a very solid player when he was playing for Nacional, but I don't think that they've seen much of him in the last sort of 2 years when he's been playing in France and he's also been playing in Turkey. So I'm hopeful that this guy will be quite a useful player for us, Derek, but we'll just have to wait and see. And the other player that we have definitely signed is another, well, we've signed him on loan, and that's Dalcio, who I knew nothing about either. 21-year-old forward from on loan from Benfica again. And again, the guys in the Portuguese footy podcast told me that he can play as an attacking midfielder or a winger. He needs to improve his finishing, but is extremely skillful and fast. You know, he has great potential for the future, and he's also been capped for the Portuguese under 20 team. So those are the players that we've definitely signed, Derek, which is, you know, a good going to start off with. We have had two guys over from Mexico, Carlos Peña and Eduardo Herrera, who have came over. They've agreed terms, but we need to wait on work permits for them. Now, again, Derek, I don't know much about these guys. Certainly, Peña is the one that's the sort of higher profile player, centre midfielder, 27 years old. He, obviously, the manager knows him from his time in Mexico. He currently is playing for Club Leon, but he's on loan Deportivo Guadalajara, and he's played 23 times this season. He's scored 3 goals. He's got 19 caps for the full Mexico team, and we're hearing quotes of £2.3 million, which I don't know if that is true or not, but again, there's been so many stories coming out. But he certainly has got the pedigree, makes him sound as if he's going to be a quality player, Derek. But again, unknown entity for us, you know, guys playing in Mexico, so remains to be seen. And also, Eduardo Herrera, who's a 28-year-old striker, he plays for one of the biggest clubs in Mexico, Pumas, but he's been on loan at Veracruz. And he was on loan at Santos Laguna, obviously, when Pedro Caixinha was there. He's been capped for Mexico 9 times and apparently is, you know, a penalty box striker, very good in the air. But again, don't know much about him. The player who I'm quite excited about as well, I don't know, again, how much you know about this guy, Derek, is Alfredo Morelos, who's a 20-year-old Colombian striker who he's been capped again for the Colombian under-20 teams. Now, he was playing in Finland last season for HJK, who are, you know, probably the biggest club in Finland. Now, I realise the Finnish league isn't the best, Derek. It's not, you know, it's not one of Europe's elite leagues, but he scored 37 goals in 42 games in total, this guy. So, and I've watched a lot of the stuff that people have been putting in YouTube. He looks extremely fast, extremely skillful, and he can score for just about anywhere. He was battering them in outside the box. He was coming in with headers, you know, tucking them away. Certainly potential, this guy, you know, if he's the real deal, could be a fantastic player. He's had, in the Finnish league, he's had more shots per game than any other player. That was last season, and way ahead this season. 50% of his shots are on target, and basically he's the type of player that likes the ball sort of played in front of him so he can run onto it. You know, a real prospect there, Derek, and we're talking about £1 million for him as well. But those three players that I've just said, are, we're waiting on work permits for all three of them, but they've all been over. They've all agreed terms. Everything looks to be in place apart from the work permits. And then the last two players are players that we know a bit better. Graham Dorans, Derek, now this has been going on for a while as well. You know, 30 years old, he's been capped numerous times for Scotland. Started off at Livingston, went to West Brom. He was fantastic for West Brom in the Premiership. There was rumours a few years ago that he was going to get bought for big money, but it didn't happen. And he went to Norwich 2015, where he has had a total of about 300-odd appearances for them. He scored 54 goals in his time at Norwich, which is a lot for a midfielder. And last season, he had the highest passing accuracy out of the whole of the Championship. 86% of his passes were completed passes. So we know he's a big blue nose as well, which is, I think, is a big factor in him, you know, coming to us. But again, it all comes down to how much money Norwich, I think, are wanting. 1.2. We've been in with a couple of smaller bids for him, so it just depends what we go back with, and hopefully we can get his personal terms. I think that would be a fantastic signing for us. I really do. And then the one that's in the paper today, apparently we've made two bids for Jamie Walker of Hearts. We all know about him. He destroyed us the last time that we played at Tynecastle. He scored. He's played either attacking midfielder or a winger. He scored 14 goals for Hearts last season. He's only 23. Again, all the pictures have been coming out. Him at Ibrox and, you know, cheering on Rangers. I thought it was maybe Photoshop, but I've been told reliably that it is him and he is a Rangers fan, even although folk are coming on saying he's a Jambo, and obviously they'll say that because that's who he's playing for. But Hearts have basically said that they're not going to do a deal unless we offer them £1 million. Now, we can sign him on a pre-contract in January. I would like to see us getting him now, to be perfectly honest with you. And I think possibly if we were to go to Hearts with a bid of about 800,000, they would maybe buckle and they would sell him to us. Certainly Dorans and Walker, I think, would be fantastic signings for us. The rest of the guys is a wait and see for me, Derek. I don't know what your thoughts on all of those players are.
Aye, I mean, certainly it's, as you've kind of said, it's a bit of a unknown quantity. You can only take their previous stats at face value now, because you look at Nicky Clark, a prime example, you know, 42 goals in the same division they played for with us, and he was pathetic with us. So, you know, it's certainly a good prospect. People, you it's a big difference when we're signing players from, you know, fairly top of their country's, you know, teams. We're not signing them from Accrington Stanley, we're signing them from Benfica, for God's sake.
Exactly. Well, that's what I've been saying as well, Derek.
And it's the media as well. You look at, you know, some of the reports from what the media in these countries are saying about them, like the as well as the podcast you were talking about. Yep. And they're all raving about these players. So, you know, certainly it's a good start. And as you said, that, you know, he's obviously identified the weaknesses of the team and he's went out and signed these players for their positions, unlike what Warburton done last year. So it's certainly a good start, and it's looking promising. I'm excited.
No, I'm excited as well, Derek, as I say, especially the fact that we've been linked with these players that we know nothing about, but we've also seen guys who, you know, are well established, or we're being linked to guys that are well established players that we know will do well for us. So I can't wait. Just on that note, Derek, I said that I've mentioned them a couple of times, but I just want to say thank you to the guys from the PT Footy podcast, who are just a couple of guys who basically talk about what's going on in Portuguese football with the national team. And I've listened to the pod a couple of times. I was in hospital, as I say, I told you, and I was bored. The one good thing I'll say about the hospital, though, Derek, Glasgow Royal Infirmary, I've got a very good patient Wi-Fi, so I was able to download stuff on my phone and listen back. But it's some interesting stuff, so if you're interested in Portuguese football at all, you can certainly give their wee pod a listen to. And who knows, if we sign more Portuguese guys in the future, they might have a bigger sort of interest than what's going on over here. And I know just with the wee conversations I had back and forth that they'll be taking a wee note of the players that we're bringing in and how they're doing, so we'll wait and see what happens. But thanks again to those guys for all that information.
Yes, thanks a lot. You've made Dave do work this week, so
exactly.
I mean, on that note, they did play a game today which I was totally unaware of.
I was exactly the same, Derek, yeah, until I read it a couple of hours ago. So
played against it was a behind closed doors game against Northern Irish team at Coleraine.
Coleraine, and
we won 5-0. Basically it was just a runabout just to kind of get them used to each other by the look of it. Two different teams in each half, so it was Tavernier, Bates, Cardoso, Wallace, Jack, Holt, Cranshaw, Dalcio, Wycorn and Miller. Second half there was O'Halloran, Wilson, Ross, McCrory, Bierman, Rossiter, Halliday, Windass, Mackay and Hardy. Thompson came on for him in the 76th minute. That was Jordan Thompson.
Jordan Thompson, yep.
Mm-hmm. And Dodu on the score sheet was an OG, the first goal. Wycorn, Hardy, Dodu, and O'Halloran. So it's interesting to note that the players that are there, because we haven't talked about the players that are likely to leave. I would have said, a good few of them were some of the ones that were going to leave.
Exactly, and notable O'Halloran getting played at right wing back,
really?
And he still scored. Yeah, I was reading some of the reports that got, and O'Halloran was playing at right wing back, and apparently scored an absolutely tremendous goal where he basically just ran right and scored. So, I don't know. He was one of the players that I thought would maybe get offered to the likes of Hearts for Walker or something like that. But I don't know if Hearts would match his wages or not. I think that might be the problem with a lot of these guys, Derek, is the wages and that they're on. Because I know it's no huge amount of wages, but for all the other clubs in Scotland, and you know, they certainly won't be getting as much as what they're getting with us. So I think that might be the big problem.
Yeah, I mean, some of the signings that we've been linked with anyway. I mean, obviously, the whole previous Rangers contingent has been thrown out the window. I can guarantee there's no going to be any way we're going to sign any of them now, is there?
That's right. Yep.
So that was obviously your Lafferty's and your Nae Shames and all that kind of thing. But the strangest one, and I think that it's been the mainstream media that have got this, and I think they've just noticed he's signing Portuguese people. Oh, this guy's Portuguese. That's picked him out of the hat.
That's all it's been, Derek. Yeah. Let's be honest. That's all it's been.
And I'm talking about former Manchester United player Annie.
Right. It's I know, Derek, it's a lot of nonsense, but it is funny.
Three facts about him, or maybe more actually, if I can think of it on the top of my head. But he's only signed for Valencia last summer. He cost them $7.2 million. He'll be on a massive wage. And he played over 25 games for them last year. Do you actually see him signing for Rangers? Absolutely no chance.
It is funny though, Derek. I must admit, it's hilarious. And there's so many people, haters, supporters of other teams that get their knickers in a twist with things like this. It is quite funny, and that's why I like to keep things like that going, because I know that it annoys so many people when we get linked to big players like that, you know. So, no, it's highly amusing. It's never going to happen, but the vast majority of supporters out there know that it is just a bit of fun, but it's hilarious.
Yep. Last thing I kind of want to do about in this section, I just want to address a wee bit of a Twitter spat I got into.
Oh, here we go. Right, okay.
I'm not going to mention any names because I wouldn't do them that injustice, but if you want to see it, you can look at our timeline. But basically, I put a tweet out because I've seen a lot of people retweeting this guy, and basically he was slating Dave King for, well, it's not his money that he's putting in to buy these players. And I kind of put something, it's quite amazing that, you know, we're actually going somewhere, we're spending money, and there's still people that moan simply because it's season ticket money getting used to fund these players rather than Dave King's own personal pocket. And it's the same ones time and time again that have got their bee in their bonnet about Dave King, and they can't come up with a better solution about who they want in place other than Mike Ashley, funnily enough.
Surely, Derek, can I stop you this second? I know the two guys that you had the heated conversation with over Twitter, but is that what their end game is? Are they pro Ashley for some reason? Is that what they were suggesting at some point?
I really don't know. I mean, I hate
And one of his
wee cronies pulled me up on this, and I hate to question people's allegiances to Rangers on social media, but when you're constantly coming on social media and you're spouting your negative shit, putting your slanted angle on it, and it's quite clear what you're doing, what else are you meant to think? Now, a lot of other more prominent Rangers fans on Twitter than us, you know, were already thinking the exact same. And I never mentioned the names of these people, but it's quite funny. They both kind of came.
Yeah, they both jumped. Yeah,
they both knew what I was talking about, and they got very defensive about it. Mm-hmm. Now, I really don't understand where they're coming from. Yes, we all know Dave King is not squeaky clean, but as
allegedly.
But at the same time, you know, as somebody pointed out to one of them, is every single businessman will have their skeletons in their closet. There is no successful businessman who doesn't have you know, that kind of nature in them, and also, you know, they've, you know, maybe not been as above board as they could have been with certain things. Now, then the conversation got into the TAB ruling about the acting in concert thing. Now, yeah, I admit I maybe got that slightly wrong in terms of, you know, the terminology of, you know, whether he's been proven guilty or whatever. But obviously what's happened here is TAB have found him in breach of their rules, told them, well, that's what you've got to do, you've got to make this offer to the shareholders. He's not done so within the allotted time, and they're now taking him to the Court of Session for the Court of Session to compel him to, you know, make that offer. Now, as they've already pointed out, this has never happened before in a company in Britain. It's the first time the Court of Session has actually been used as a vehicle to compel someone to do this. Mm-hmm. Now, their instant thing is, he's fucking guilty. You know, they're going to find him guilty and they're going to compel him. Well, what's the point of having this hearing with the Court of Session then, if it's a case of he's already guilty of this? My point was, is the Court of Session is getting used to compel him to do this, to make this, but what happens if the Court of Session turns around and says, nah, we don't compel you to do this? That makes the ruling of the Takeover Appeals Board totally invalid, because there's no punishment there for it. So Dave King was quite rightly not paying or not making the offer. There's, of course, Dave King's going to be largely in it for himself, but has he shown anything that he hasn't been for it for Rangers? Because he didn't need to step in. He could have just done it he could have done nothing. But he stepped up. Yes, there's questions about, you know, has he put personal money in? But a lot of people are forgetting he's the largest single shareholder at 14%. Now, he's had to buy these shares for some way, for using his own money, obviously, or money that's linked to his companies. So it's not as if he's not put money in to get control of the club. Yes, the money he's put in to buy these shares, yes, has not went directly to the club. But you've had to buy these shares because they've not been in the stock market at the time. You've had to pay the money initially to someone.
All we hear about Derek is this £30 million that when he done his interview with the media, I just wished back at that point he had never even mentioned all of this. Remember talking about his kids' inheritance and stuff like that. This is what keeps getting dragged up all the time, and the vast majority of people, and we've been through it, Derek, I'm actually getting sick and tired of talking about it, but there are people out there who basically thought, oh, well, £30 million, that's going to go straight into buying us players. But we've been over this, you know, running a club, you know, it's not just a matter of going out and buying players. There's so many other things that need to get done. And people can see the difference in Ibrox and the work that's been carried out inside and out and stuff like that. I mean, that's it's no peanuts to do stuff like that. So, I mean, I firmly believe that there's been a lot of money spent on the stadium, behind the scenes, you know, and everything that's going on. And we're now starting to get players in as well. So I just wish that whole amount that had been mentioned, that £30 million and stuff like that, I just wish that hadn't been mentioned at all.
I mean,
it's the first thing that gets thrown up all the time by the media, and the first thing that gets thrown up by supporters of both our club and, you know, other fans out there as well. And I just wish that hadn't been said at all, but it has been. And the vast majority of level-headed fans out there know that, you know, like you, Derek, I've said all along, I'm not going to pretend that the guy is the answer for our club, but he was the only one that was willing to step forward, like what you said, when we had nobody else, when it was only Mike Ashley and nothing else. And thank God he did, because I dread to think what state we would be in now if Ashley was still in charge.
Exactly. I mean, the whole point is that, yes, he has absolutely said some questionable things. There needs to be more transparency with certain areas of the board. We're not questioning that, but it's the whole point of bringing it back around to, you know, certain issues. Just the pure agenda-driven hatred of the guy. Yep. Yeah, he's maybe not the best guy, but as you said, who else is there? There is no other option.
There wasn't, Derek, and that's what's annoying me. See if there had been a list of guys out there that were willing to step forward and say, no, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, we would have said, all right, fair enough, but there wasn't. He was our only option, and he did step forward when he did, and I still can't believe that there's people out there still having that discussion. Because we all seen what was going to happen with Ashley. We were getting stripped to absolutely everything, and we would end up just going to the whole club was going to be owned by him, and we would have been a feeder club for Newcastle. Everything would be driven by his, you know, his companies. We would have got dribs and drabs of players, and we would have been kept just alive and no more with him. And it would have been an absolute mess, total mess, merrier mess than we're in at the moment. We still, you know, a lot of the stuff that he's embroiled in the club. And if Dave King had stepped in when he did, I really do fear what state we would be in now. I really do.
I mean, the thing is, it baffles me is that I made a point to these two guys on Twitter, the fact that, you know, we're finally getting somebody who's been a wee bit off the wall. He's actually standing up for the club. And, you know, fans are moaning about that when that's something we've been crying out for before.
Yep.
Now, they kind of said, you know, how's he stood up for the club? And then they used the example of, you know, after the fans with the Hibs fans after the cup final. I just want to know, that gets used quite a bit on Twitter when you're trying to settle an argument with a certain agenda. What do fans actually want the club to do in relation to that? Right after the game, they came out with a very strong statement. A couple of days later, they came out with a strong statement. Yeah, again, after the ruling with the SFA, after, you know, months after it had happened, they came out with another statement. What actually do the club, what do the fans want the club to do in that relation? I mean, there's restrictions on what you can do in terms of, you know, fans, because you can't ban away fans from your ground through SPFL rules, I believe. If somebody can give me what they actually want the club to do, stand up for the fans. But what do you want the club? What do you want the club to do to stand up for the fans? By, give me an example, because you can't ban away fans from the ground. It beggars belief. And another point on the fact that the whole Mike Ashley situation and the way that they're agenda driven against King is, somebody put on Twitter saying that, I don't want, obviously the news broke that there's a Chinese billionaire maybe coming by Newcastle, and obviously the speculation started, oh, maybe that's what Ashley, or maybe want Champions League football and he'll get that with Rangers and he'll put the money in. And somebody made the point on Twitter, I don't want Ashley anywhere near my club, you know, he's not good for us, and Newcastle's the proof. And one of the guys I was having an argument with on Twitter turned around instantly, and not about Ashley, and he said, is Paul Murray and Dave King any better? Like, do you want them in? That point was nothing to do with them.
Aye.
You know, Mike Ashley. So, you know, it's just pure agenda-driven bullshit from some people. And yeah, it's all good having opinions, but actually give some valid points and actually give some varied points about what you actually want, rather than just you don't like Dave King, you think he's a crook.
I mean, we keep saying it to we're blue in the face. He was the only one, Derek, that stepped forward. Whether you think, you know, there's certain things about him that are questionable, he was the only one that stepped forward. So he's the one that we've really got to give our support to. If there had been another option there, a better option, we would have been gone for that, but he's not. And it finally looks as if we are going in the right direction now, Derek. So we'll just have to wait and see. But as you say, it is baffling. And I think you were quite right to question the allegiances of at least one of the guys anyway, because the way that he was coming out, he sounded exactly like, you know, supporters of another club would be with us on Twitter. So you were quite right, but I think we've spent enough time talking about them, to be honest with you.
Yes, we will move on now and we will go into the Blue Room. Right, just a couple of bits and pieces here. Obviously, news broke that John Gilligan has stepped down from the board, and I'm guessing it's in places of him. His former chairman, Alistair Johnson, is back in the board.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are unhappy with that because it's apparently the same board we had when Craig White was in charge. The whole point is the board were quite opposed to what was going on with Craig White, and they were powerless to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm,
so
that's right.
I don't know what people's complaints are with that one.
Yes, I think Alistair Johnson was one of the first people to step down once the Craig White takeover was there, because, again, we're going on stuff that we heard. You saw the Mark Daly thing that he put on after the Craig White trial, and you know, he spoke to Alistair Johnson there about it, and he was quite candid as to what his feelings were over the whole situation, and that's when he stepped down. And to be fair, Derek, when Alistair Johnson stepped in, that's when the shit really did hit the fan for us, to be honest with you. So we just have to hope that he's a very knowledgeable man, a very successful businessman as well in America. He's got a lot of links to different sports companies and media companies in America. So we just have to hope that he can bring, you know, a lot to the table when he comes back in. So I was quite pleased. As you say, that there will always be people out there who'll complain regardless who comes in.
Yep. Next thing I want to, or the last thing I want to touch upon here, as Dave mentioned it, is the Craig White trial.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are not being very careful on Twitter when they really should be, because of certain elements that are still getting investigated, so I'm not going to go too much in depth, but obviously he got found not guilty. I don't really know what to say about that. I mean, you've maybe got to go with what the jury decided on, but it was a bit of a baffling thing, where it was set to be one of the most complex trials of Scottish kind of legal history, from what we got told. There was 3 months set aside for it. I think it lasted 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It was just your average Joe, you know, in the jury, and they taken less than 2 hours to decide a not guilty verdict.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind that their choices was guilty, not guilty, or not proven. This was an unequivocal not guilty.
Yes. There's, as you say, Derek, there's been a lot of things have been said on Twitter. There's been questions asked about the jury. There's been questions asked about the location.
Yep.
There's been questions asked about the police's involvement in it. There's been questions asked about the prosecutors and about the, you know, the defence lawyers. I'm with you at the moment, Derek. I really don't think we can say a lot about it. There's a lot of questions that I certainly would like answered, which haven't been. But we have to be very careful in what we say here. Going straight away after that, as I say, Mark Daly done his piece on the BBC after it, and basically the way that he portrayed the whole thing was that it was David Murray's fault and David Murray's to blame for the whole thing. But again, we have to be very careful about what we say. That was just my interpretation of his analysis of the whole thing, but there's certainly a hell of a lot of questions that still need to be answered, in my opinion.
I mean, in terms of the location and the jury, I think there was something, I'm not going to say there was something untoward happening, but what I'm saying is the judge apparently said, if you're a Rangers fan, you need to excuse yourself.
Yes.
Given the fact that there's been 5 years of complete hatred of our club, I think that's a very, very strange thing to do.
Aye.
It should have been held, in my opinion, in England somewhere where there's no links at all.
Yep.
But it was, whether that can be done, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. Or there should have been, there should have been something, I think, put in place that way, because, as you know, for that to be said, again, when you watch what we're saying here, Derek, we need to be careful, but baffling. You know, and a lot of questions that still need to be answered. I don't know what's going to happen now. I don't know if there's going to be any appeals made, or if they're allowed to make any appeals, or if anything else will come of it. But very, very strange, the whole thing that happened. And as you say, something that was supposed to go on for 3 months, for it to be over in such a short space of time, is baffling also. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, one thing is, as you said there, as Mark Daly said, it was effectively David Murray's fault. I said to you, you know, within the first couple of days of the trial, I can see the way the defence is building their questions up and try to, you know, do it. And it was exactly the way it was, is, you know, Murray was... is the one who basically didn't seem to care where the monies came from, and no money was spent on the due diligence, which was apparently meant to have been done. And that seems to be the case. Murray wanted shot of it at all costs, and apparently there was a deal done with the tax man that, you know, if you sell the, was it something like you sell the club and you would be able to keep your Murray international
business? That's right,
business.
Yes.
So, yep. You know, there's...
Which to, you know, was... put to Alistair Johnson, who, you know, according to him at the time, was said he had absolutely no idea that that was the case, and, you know, he was quite taken aback by it all. You know, when he heard that part of it, that was the sort of big revelation point of Mark Daly's piece, was that deal that he did with the tax man so that he could keep his company. That was the big shocker. It certainly doesn't put David Murray in a good light at all, you know, going by that. But again, I don't know if we'll ever get any real answers for the whole thing, Derek. It was a big letdown for a lot of fans that have been, you know, we've been through hell, let's be honest. And to see everything that's happened to our club by, you know, guys that are, you know, basic imposters that have came in at the club, it's been absolutely shocking, and we've been through the mill, every single one of us, and we still don't have any answers.
No.
It's shocking, and will we ever get any answers? I honestly don't know.
I think that the whole thing that's happened has been a perfect storm. Everything, for every which way you look at it, there's been a perfect storm. You've had everything was going fine with EBTs, with everything like that, until the banking crisis happened, and that's when it all went tits up, really, is the bank started calling in overdrafts that Murray had over Rangers and his own clubs. His own businesses started failing because of the whole metal industry starting to go tits up as well. Then you had him just wanting to get rid of the club at any cost. And again, I'm wanting to watch what we're saying, because this might be the recourse thing, with the fact that David Murray effectively had that deal with HMRC of, you sell Rangers and we'll allow you to keep your thing. So I'm not going to say too much about that. Then you've had, obviously, Craig White is, you know, obviously, apparently not guilty of these two things, but I think the general consensus has been up to something. Then you've had the person who's taken over from him, you know, he's obviously been up to no good. Then you've had Mike Ashley coming in on the back of that person, signing erroneous deals with these people.
Yep.
You know, it's just been a perfect storm of people taking the piss out of our club for the last 5 years. And it's just finally, you know, it looks to be we're getting back on track now.
And, but Derek, I think the annoying thing is that they've got away with it.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And that's the pill that we really can't swallow. That one, it's I mean, that is, you know, we've been calling out for, you know, it seems like forever, but the last 6 years, wanting answers, and it looks to me as if a lot of people have done our club over, and they're all going to get away with it.
Yeah.
And that's the bad thing, and that's the nightmare, and that's the thing that we're all going to have to live with, is that we're not going to get any answers, and we're not going to get any justice because of it.
No.
And what's going to annoy me as well is, hopefully, we will get back to the good times, and it'll all be forgotten about, and these people will get away with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just a nightmare, and it's a scenario that every Rangers fan out there wants some sort of justice for somebody. We want, you know, there's got to be somebody held accountable for what happened to us, and it looks as if it's not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, another thing that came out in the trial as well is that apparently Ali McQuaist had a golden handshake contract where when Walter Smith stepped down, he was to become the manager, and if he didn't, he would be paid megabucks by the club.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that was obviously the previous regime before White came in that gave him that, so that'll be your... But I wonder who was involved in that, because that is scandalous for him. I mean, there was always questions about, one, his managerial ability, but then two, the way he left the club and the way he had us hanging on, and the way he's acted with his shares that was given to him as well. I don't see any way. I mean, as a player, you can never take that away from him, but as a person, I thought he was bigger than that.
Yeah, I'm the same as you, Derek. But as I say, when you look at the old regime, you look at the chief executive we had in Martin Bain, you know, we can see some of the contracts that were, you know, given to the likes of him, you know, and the negotiations that went on. And funnily enough, I laughed at a tweet earlier on where somebody says, you know, what chance did Sunderland have of getting Derek McInnes when they sent Martin Bain over there to do the negotiations? Because he's apparently in Florida, the new McInnes, and he flew over to do, you know, the negotiations. So it was like when we, you know, back in the old days with us, when there was a lot of things were fucked up, and it seems to be that Bain was in the middle of it all. And it's baffling, Derek, and that for me, the worst thing for me is the fact that it looks as if everybody that's screwed over a club are going to get away with it. That's what's really bad for me.
Right, we'll wrap up there, and we will now go to the classic match.
The classic match.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
Right, I've been working Dave like a cart horse today because he's got another classic match for us.
Exactly right, Derek. I spoke about him briefly there, and that was my player of the season, the guy that I thought was absolutely outstanding for us last season, Kenny Miller. So I thought I'll go back and I'll have a look for when Kenny Miller first signed for Rangers in a big match for him. And I think this is possibly the match that really, you know, that got him all the limelight and set him up really for the rest of his Rangers career, and then further after that. And it was a game that took place on the 4th of November 2000, and it was a league tie at Ibrox where we played against St Mirren. Now, at this point in time, Dick Advocaat was the manager. We had a number of world-class players on our team, but we had a bit of a sort of injury crisis at the time, and we had a massive game, the fateful game against Monaco Ibrox coming up, Derek, the game that we had to win and was snatched away from us in, you know, at injury time by Marco Simone when he scored the equaliser. Remember that, the 2-2 game? But this game was the match that was, you know, just before that game. Rangers lined up Christensen. Do you remember him?
Goalkeeper
that we signed, and he only played about 3 games for us. This was one of the matches that he played. We had Rixon, Amoruso, Newman and Wilson playing in defence. Midfield, we had Barry Ferguson, George Alberts, Ronald De Boer and Tugai. And then up front, we had Michael Moles and Kenny Miller on the bench for Rangers that was used that day. Neil McCann, Bert Conterman, Billy Dodds were all on the bench, along with Brown and Gibson. So this game was to be a fantastic game for Kenny Miller, and I'll get into that very soon. But basically, it started off, Michael Moles had came back into the team. He had been out injured for so long. The Rangers fans were just pleased to see him back playing. This had been out for so long, Derek, after his nightmare injury against Bayern Munich. So this was one of the first games he was playing when he came back, and we were really trying to get him match fit for the match against Monaco. So we started off in the game, early chance. Kenny Miller was put into the team. He had just been bought at the start of that season from Hibs. So just a young guy at the time, Miller, but he had an early chance, return for Michael Moles, who played the ball through to Alberts, was touched on to Miller. His first shot was just wide at the top corner. Now that was just in like the first minute, but he had his shot, it was going at the top corner. The goalkeeper actually got a fingertip to it and pushed it just wide, top corner. Good save. And from that resulting corner in the second minute, we opened the scoring.
Taken by De Boer, a lot of curl in that. Scrimger not happy with it, and that's in. Miller scores the opening goal for Rangers after exactly 1 minute 20 seconds.
Ronald De Boer put the ball in. It was punched by the goalkeeper, and it sort of fell to Miller on the penalty spot, and he just dinked it from the penalty spot right in at the top corner. Strange goal scored by Miller, but he opened the goal scoring at that point. And then just after that,
Miller again, another shot across the goal, which was just wide. No long after that, Michael Moyles with another shot just over the bar also, completely all over it. Very patient play by Rangers between that goal in the second minutes and to the next goal in the 23rd.
That's a better ball to Miller. Now Moyles. Well, the St Mirren penalty area simply being besieged. That's a beautiful pass. And it's in, yes! Miller, superb finish and a great move by Rangers. As I said, you cannot allow Newman that space on the left-hand side. And young Kenny Miller, two goals now, staking the positive claim for Tuesday night's game as he slides in here to finish a glorious move. Rangers 2 up.
A lot of square balls getting played from side to side. Keeping a hold of the ball, trying to turn it into a training ground game, basically. Loads of square passing, like I said. And then on the 23rd minute, the ball was passed over to Newman, who crossed it to the back post along the ground to Kenny Miller, who slid in at the back post to make it 2-0 to Rangers. That was just on the 23rd minute. 2-0, Kenny Miller with two goals. And then no, even 2 minutes after that, 25th minute.
Cleared effectively, Ferguson goes in very well. On it goes to Moyles, and there's the ball through to Albert. He's looking inside towards Miller again, and he again! A hat-trick for the youngster, gloriously put in.
Barry Ferguson charges down a ball in midfield in his own half, plays the ball on to Michael Moyles on the left-hand side, and at first time, pass to Alberts on the left wing, and Alberts ran onto this and put a first time cross, incredible goal, right over the goal, and there was Kenny Miller with a fantastic header, bulleted it in. 25 minutes, scored his hat trick, absolutely incredible, but he wasn't to stop there, Miller. 6 minutes later, 31st minute.
Here's De Boer, lovely little run there by Ferguson. Here's Miller again! Yes! Well, he is almost slightly embarrassed by scoring four goals in that one so easily.
Miller picks up the ball on the left-hand side of the box. He hits a low shot at goal. The goalkeeper really should have saved it. Goes over his hand, trundles it into the net. So that was four goals to Kenny Miller. And that was only in the 31st minute. And then just after that again, Michael Moyles shown us the skill that we all knew. It was fantastic. It was a sort of reverse nutmeg that he pulled on the player to get his shot away, but it was cleared at the last minute. It would have been a spectacular goal. St Mirren pulled one back in the 44th minute to make it 4-1. Kenny Miller had the chance to extend his goals just before half-time, but his shot was just over the bar. He was totally on fire in this game, Kenny Miller. Into the second half, Billy Dodds had came on for Michael Moyles, I believe it was. Moyles was given just one half to try and prove his fitness. So Dodds came on. He wanted to get in the goals. He had a shot straight away, just past the post. And then on the 57th minute,
Caruso picked it up. Now Ferguson. And Caruso on the left wing now. What's he going to do with it? It's a goal! Billy Dodds this time. An excellent play by Rangers ex-captain.
We got the next goal, and it was Barry Ferguson to Lorenzo Amoruso. Amoruso had ran from defence past Barry Ferguson. Ferguson got the ball. Amoruso kept running on the left-hand side. Ferguson passed the ball, and Amoruso with a fantastic pass with the outside his right foot, low cross to Billy Dodds. He fired it in. That was 5-1 to Rangers. We kept going. No, St Mirren completely overran by us at this point. Alberts had a great chance into the box, cut it back, and the shot was over the bar. And then corner to Amoruso with a header, which was just past the post as well. And then St Mirren had probably their only chance of the second half, which made a fantastic save by Jesper Christensen in goals. A bullet header low to his left, managed to get a hand to it. It was a great save. And then on the 77th minute,
beautiful ball through to Newman. Billy Dodds. And oh, what a glorious goal! Superb strike by Miller.
Arthur Newman cut the ball back from the byline to Billy Dodds, who cut back to Miller, who hit a first-time shot from the edge of the box, so it's past the edge of the box, right in the top corner to make it 6-1. So five goals for Kenny Miller, incredible. That was in the 77th minute. And then after that, there was a long ball into the box to Billy Dodds, who gave the ball back to Miller, who hit it on the volley. And it was saved by the goalkeeper. Tremendous save. So he could have had about 9 goals in this game. And then right at the end, we wrapped things up.
Ferguson, Albert, and it goes to McCann. Can he finish? He does. Yes, he finished that beautifully. And that runs the final salt into the wound.
George Albert slips the ball through to Neil McCann, who had came on. Neil McCann managed to get the ball past the goalkeeper to make it 7-1. Fantastic game to watch back on YouTube if you get the chance to watch it. Some great goals. Kenny Miller, absolutely fantastic. Like I said, he could have easily scored 8 or 9 goals that game. So if you get the chance, go back and watch it. It's fantastic stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of finished not watching it as you were speaking there, to be honest. So,
yep.
What a goal for Kenny Miller's fifth goal. And
yeah,
what a fresh face you Miller with here.
Oh, it? I know. And still kept his number, Derek, at that point. You think he was... So, yeah, it was really good. And as I say, I think that maybe set Kenny Miller up for that point on. You know, he went on and, you know, he's a great player for us, and then obviously went on and furthered his career and then came back again the twice that he's been back. And, he's always been a great player for us, Kenny Miller, a great servant of the club. So, absolutely fantastic.
Yep, certainly a good result. I can't remember the last time we scored, a game with that big a margin in it. So.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was good stuff. There's some fantastic players on show, Derek, as well. I mean, even guys that you might forget about, like Tugai. I mean, he was a world-class player as well. But I think just because of how well Barry Ferguson was playing for us, he didn't get a lot of game time because of Ferguson, because he was, such a good player. And we had, guys like Reina and that in there as well at the time. And, some fantastic players. Of course, Ronald De Boer, one of my favourite players that's played for Rangers in the last, 30-odd years. Fantastic.
Yep. So I'll be back I'll be back next episode with another classic match.
Yes.
And now we will go into the news.
From ITN, the ITV News at 10 with Trevor McDonald.
Right, quite a few bits and pieces to go over here. I will start, I've not done this in any particular order, so it's jumping about a bit. The NARSA convention was held in Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago there. Dave King and Paul Murray attended, with King giving a speech, so a good time had by all, I think, as well.
Yes, definitely, and quite a few bits of news that came out from NARSA with talk about the sponsorship deal and possibly, even although I've not seen anything since about the merchandise deal. Is that right?
That's right, aye.
That doesn't sound right. So quite a few snippets coming out there about things like that. But as I say, you'll probably get into the sponsorship deal soon. Still nothing about the merchant. God, I'm not even going to say it, Derek.
You're doing a me tonight.
Still nothing heard about that at all. But quite a few, as I say, snippets, and that was when it was announced about Alistair Johnson coming back as well. So.
Next thing, we've got goalkeeper Liam Kelly has signed a 2-year extension to his contract, which is good to see. I always said we should never have signed about 5 different keepers under one.
Yeah, I know, yep.
So that's him there. Next thing here is we have got Billy Gilmour has gone to Chelsea for £500,000 development fee. Now, that was a long-running thing. Certainly good luck to him. The chances are he's going to be going down to the lower leagues in England or abroad to you know, get his tradecraft up. But certainly good luck to him anyway. I hope he's made the right move, but it's a great fee for us anyway, considering he's only 16.
Yeah.
She was only 16 years old.
Yep. Next thing here is Lovenkranz, Andy Little and Stephen Wright have joined the youth development team on a part-time basis. So they're going to come in and obviously, you know, help out the youth coaches and show them what they can do and help
fantastic.
Us out.
Fantastic. You can't get a bigger endorsement than the likes of Lovenkranz coming in to help out Derek. He's been there. He's a fantastic player for us, and the amount of, you know, goals against top quality opposition that he scored in domestically and in Europe is incredible. So I mean, that's a good appointment for us.
And on the note of Andy Little, he's certainly on the mend and he's just signed another year's contract with Stirling Albion. So
yes,
that's good to see. Certainly when he's been on RTV and when he's been on the radio as well, he comes across as a very sensible, level-headed guy. So
that's good to see
as well. Obviously, probably the biggest one I should have started with here is there was a site that claimed that Manchester City Academy chief Mark Allen is going to be appointed the new director of football. Obviously, on the back of that, the mainstream media picked up on that, but until it's been announced by the club, not believing anything. Certainly in times of Mark Allen, though, he's been at the forefront of Man City's academy since it opened 3 years ago. It was a £150 million academy they opened.
Yeah.
And he apparently works closely with Guardiola to instill the philosophy of the team throughout the kind of youth setup as well as the mainstream team.
As you say, though, Derek, until we've got anything confirmed, we really can't. You know, there's no much more to say at the moment. I don't know much about the guy at all, so... But it's good the fact that they are still going for the director of football role. They spoke about it for a while and then it went, you know, we never heard anything at all. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens there.
I mean, certainly he's got, whether this relates to football, I'm not too sure, but he's taken a football scholarship and a business and accounting degree. He's been working in broadcasting, or he had worked in broadcasting. He was a managing director of the broadcasting division for MTV, and then he had another managing director position at Deluxe Digital, another broadcasting company. So, we'll see what happens there.
Yep.
Next thing is Rangers have quit the Under 20s Development League and are now part of a new pioneering system with another more European teams getting involved.
Yeah.
So certainly that's very interesting and it could pave the way for a lot more.
I think, I thought that was great news, Derek. I'm well pleased that we had been allowed to join something like that, and there's a lot of top European teams that are participating in it as well, so it's fantastic.
Yep. Next thing is Rangers are transforming the concourses at Ibrox, and in partnership with 11 Sports Media we're putting new screens in the concourse for a new stadium TV network which will show live stats and live social media feeds and things like that. It's the first in Scotland and it works already with Watford and Crystal Palace. So do
you know what that's going to actually entail, Derek? Is that going to be between the Copeland Road stand and, you know, and behind the Copeland Road stand, is that where it's going to be roughly, or is it going to be outside on Edmundston Drive, or is it going to be inside the actual stadium?
In the concourses. So one of the things we heard about initially was they were going to be putting screens into the concourses. I think
is that going to be in all the stands, or is that going to be just...
From what I've heard anyway, because I don't see why they just limit it to one or two stands. But certainly that's what we're doing, and that's going to be a big social media thing, and it's going to be a big, you know, stats-driven thing, and it's a live stat thing. So certainly I'll be looking forward to seeing that. Certainly they put up or the company that's behind it or somebody related to it or whatever put up a computer graphic picture of the inside of one of the courses.
I'll have to try and find it. I've not seen anything at all about it, just to see how it would look. Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was just going to be in, you know, a couple of the stands, or they were wanting to have it in, you know, all of them, but I'll have to go and have a wee look at that.
So certainly if that's what they're planning, and they're planning a social media thing around that as well, then it might, you know, pave the way for the Wi-Fi to get properly installed in. So I don't know how it would work, because I believe that they've installed all the routers in all the stadiums, but it was never designed, or apparently misled, but it was never designed to have 50,000 people using it at once.
So yeah.
Whether they set up as a separate network for each stand, I don't know. So we'll need to wait and see in due course to see how that happens. On the note of upgrading parts of the stadium as well, is a new state-of-the-art pitchside LED advertising system will be installed in time for the beginning of the new season.
Okay.
It's basically a brand new UEFA compliant LED system which will replace the current stuff in the stadium. I did notice in the last game, I thought that, you know, that the LEDs were flickering, they were looking a bit faded as well, so they were maybe just running that down in view of this one getting installed.
Possibly.
Certainly good to see the stadium still getting improved. Apparently it was the LED system that was used in the recent Champions League final.
Alright, okay, excellent. Yeah.
So we'll see how that turns out.
Quality.
Yep. Next thing here is a bit of a funny one. Youngster Max Ashmore was booked in the under-20s game for Rangers for pulling down the shorts of James McFadden when he played against Motherwell. Bit of comedic japery that, you know, seems to get you a yellow card these days, you know.
Hilarious, right, okay. Yep.
This was paraded at half-time at the Aberdeen game by Uber fan John Hunter. He took 7 years, travelled over 100,000 miles, spent $20,000, but he's got all 86 of the players who featured in the 9-year-old campaign to sign his 92-93 away top, which was fantastic, came out.
Yep.
So,
excellent.
Certainly he's going to keep that in the family, apparently. It's not getting put to any museums or anything.
Okay.
But certainly you see the pictures he's put on for all the players and all that kind of thing. It's been pretty good. And I think he said it was Basil Wally was the hardest to track down. I mean, which is
that right?
Quite funny, because it was the same on the pitch as well. So
yeah, I saw Big Basil score a cracker of a goal at Old Brockville years and years ago. So I'll not have you slagging off Basil Wally.
Next thing here is Pedro had obviously told Michael O'Halloran, Forrester and Kiernan to turn up at training at 6 a.m. for boot camps to basically prove their worth. Now, obviously, it's just came out in the last couple of days that, in the media anyway, that Harry Forrester's been suspended and told not to, just to use the next 2 weeks to find another club.
He
came out on Twitter and said that's absolute bollocks. So I don't know who to believe, to be honest. Fans jumped on the back of it and all that kind of thing, and you know, some fans slag quite rightly the Daily Record off for being inaccurate, but then you know, they run to believe in that when it kind of suits people, so God knows. But anyway, in relation to them having to turn up at 6 a.m. by themselves, apparently there was, you know, Clyde phoning, were not happy with this, and the players union were apparently looking into this due to them being singled out basically because of it. At the end of the day, if you are in a workplace and you are underperforming, you're not hitting targets, what happens to you? You're put on a performance plan, which is an individual thing. That's the exact same thing. So regardless if it's footballers or not, it was quite right what they're doing. So
it's a lot has been made about Forrester, Derek. Apparently there was some pictures of him showing off his belly at one point in the training, and it looked as if he'd put on a lot of weight and things like that. We've spoke about him at length, Derek. We both think he's a fantastic player, but obviously there's something far wrong. Don't know if it's attitude, I don't know if it's anything to do with training, honestly, don't know. I just, you know, Kiernan I've never rated, I don't think he's good enough. O'Halloran, we've spoken about him as well. He's been given numerous chances to shine, hasn't. It's no worked for him at all. You know, the manager has given them, you know, has given them the chances, you say, to try and prove that they're desperate to stay at the club. Whether or not they've done that, I don't know. I just think it's quite sad that, you know, young guys like that, none of the three of them will ever have the chance to play for a club the size of us again. And I hope that dawns on them at one point that they had a chance there, especially Forrester, because I really did think he would be, you know, could be a quality player for us. And they'll never get the chance to play for a club the size of Rangers again, because let's be honest, who's going to pick them up? It'll be a very, you know, the lower end of the English leagues that they would go, you know, down to. Maybe O'Halloran would get another club in the Premier League in Scotland, but I honestly don't know. It's quite sad when you're in that position and you know you're told to find another club because you basically, and I think a lot of it comes down to attitude. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, this is obviously getting onto the kind of wider football issue here.
Yeah.
But it's money that's destroyed it for the fact that, yep. you know, these guys, you know, it's widely known that most footballers aren't too bright. I mean, they're right now, even if they're sitting on $2,000 or $3,000 a week, it's more money than we'll ever see in our lifetime, yep. chances are. And maybe that's okay for them. They know they're maybe not going to earn, you know, the 50, 100, 400 grand a week kind of wage that some players get. They're maybe quite happy sitting at that. They're nesting that away and they think, well, I didn't really need to try because, you know, I'm not going to get any more than this. So, and it's when you see, you know, youngsters literally, you know, under 20s driving about in, you know, 50 grand cars, you know, because of the way money is, especially yeah. down south these days. Maybe that's part of the issue, but
maybe
that's, as I said, wider football
issue. Aye, that is, I know.
Moving on, another funny thing here. John McEnroe, always loved that guy. He was being interviewed and he was talking about Andy Murray and his support of Hibs. Big Johnny Mac turned around and said he's never heard of them. The only Scottish team he's ever heard of is Rangers.
Rangers quality. You know, I've seen that. I actually put a thing out on Facebook and it wound up a few Celtic fans that I know out there about the fact that they said that, and basically they called him a walloper and all of that, and he's a halfy seed and all that, but that was quality. I had a wee chortle to myself when I read that.
Another funny one here, as we've spoke about him earlier on in the podcast, Tom Miller has come out, and when he done an interview for the Rangers fans channel in January, why the video's only emerged now, I'm not too sure, basically calling Chris Sutton a wank, and he said he's called him a twat, and he's stealing a wage. I need to edit, I need to do that back again. Basically, he called him a wank.
No, that was you.
And that was me,
start that one again.
Basically calling Chris Sutton a twat and he's stealing a wage, and he revealed a time when that Chris Sutton was working for BT and he was at Ibrox. He was too scared to go down to trackside and do the interviews, so he wanted to do it up in the gantry, but it prevented Miller getting to his own seat, and basically, you know, Tom Miller was told not to, you know, go over when they're filming, but he just, you know, went over anyway after being left, and he kind of gave a wee look into the camera as well.
Aye. So,
you know, it's pretty funny, but why that it's emerged now, I'm not too sure.
I know, but as I say, I didn't think Tom was saying anything out of order, Derek, to be perfectly honest with you. No. As me and you know tonight, with that wee retweet that he put out.
So. Exactly. Last piece of Rangers news here, or Rangers related news anyway, bit of a good news story. Lee Wallace has finally got married after apparently, you know, not being happy about his time off allegedly. But his long term partner Steph on Sunday there, so congratulations to them both.
Yes, congratulations to the captain, yep.
Other bit of football news here, Nacho Novo is leaving Glentoran. That broke just before the end of the season there, so 38-year-old, you know, good luck to him and whatever he does. I don't think he'll be playing at Rangers like he...
No, he's... I think he'll always be a hero to us, Derek. Very popular with all the supporters still. The time I met him, he was brand new, and as you say, we just want to wish him all the best. He'll always be welcome back, and you know, he comes to watch the team and things like that.
Yep. And last piece of football news here is Dick Advocaat has been named the Holland coach for the third time, with Ruud Gullit being his number two.
Oh, I didn't realise it was Ruud. I thought we were signing Ruud Gullit. Or is that the Mexican Ruud Gullit that we're signing?
I think that's the Mexican.
That's what Peña's nickname is, apparently. Gullit. Oh, no, I didn't realise it was Gullit that was his number two. But another ex-manager, and as you say, it's his third time there, so he knows what he's doing. Holland have been pretty poor recently. They've, you know, some of their results have been shocking, so I think they're needing a total change in leadership there, so we'll wait and see how that happens.
Yep. So, moving on now, we'll go into this thing here. From licking doorknobs to a fetish for farting. Sexual kinks you probably never heard of.
Derek, I really dread to think where you're getting this, because this doesn't sound like a newspaper article.
Nasophilia. Who knows what it could be? Nasophilia is a sexual attraction to the nose. This may mean a desire for genital contact with the nose, touching the nose, or specific fantasies such as desire to penetrate the nostrils.
Okay.
Doorknob licking. Apparently it's big in Japan.
Right, I'm getting the idea where this is going to lead to.
This is where my pronunciation goes here. Falurcalagonygia.
Okay.
This is one for the fellas. It describes those who are sexually aroused by receiving a painful hit to the male genitals.
Oh, seriously?
Yep. Eproctophilia. Bean fans may be able to find a perfect partner in this. It's the rather stinky fetish of being sexually attracted to flatulence.
Do you think that's what's helped Big Donk in the years gone by?
Can you get this one? Mechanophilia.
Right, okay.
Sexually attracted to machinery.
Mm-hmm.
That's that one.
Sexually attracted to machinery?
Machinery, yes.
Right, okay.
Froturism. Also known as frottage. Frottage.
Okay.
This is defined as getting off by rubbing yourself, usually in the pelvic area, against unsuspecting people.
Derek, I've never heard of any of them. Thank fuck.
Yeah.
I've never heard of any of them.
A bit strange, certainly.
The one that I had read the other day, and it was, I know that you would probably find these hilarious. It was a sexual act, and it was called a... Was it you that told me that time about the one that was called the Spider-Man?
Oh, yeah.
Right, well, this is something similar. And it was called the Dirty Chewbacca. Have you heard of that?
I've heard of the Dirty Beppy, but not the Dirty Chewbacca.
This is best price, now you give me yours.
Love a Dirty Beppy.
The thing that I read about the dirty Chewbacca, and I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but it was somebody had put it on. It was some mad owner to Twitter page had put the definition as, so I don't. Right, here we go. Right. When a girl is giving you a blowjob, right, grab her nipples just as you're about to come, and when she screams, the warm liquid in her throat makes her sound like Chewbacca.
Oh my god.
There you go, mate. There's a new one to add to your list. Chewbacca.
Oh, right.
An hour and 45 minutes. You said about an hour and a half, so I take it with the time.
I'm not finished yet.
Oh, you know?
Women reveal the weirdest things.
Oh, here we go. All right.
Partners have said and done during sex.
Okay.
Some people do quite bizarre things during sex, or just before, or immediately after. So, on the kind of mum's net, I think it was, women have been typing this in their thing about funny things that people have said. One guy said, very formally, thank you, before dismounting.
Okay.
A very posh ex-public schoolboy who declaimed, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes, as he ejaculated.
Okay.
I knew a guy who used to call out random bits of kitchenware. Kenwood mixer, ceramic hob.
Is that rhyming slang?
I don't know. One guy talked about this girl he managed to take back to his flat. Naked on all fours, on the bed, she turned to say, none of your fancy stuff, just horse it into me.
That sounds like my type of girl, Derek.
Another woman shares, I overheard my uni housemate cry, smash my pasty, as she was having sex. I've never been able to walk into a Greggs again without thinking of it.
Exactly. Smash my pasty. What a classy bird.
And the last one here, A very odd man I once dated once got out of bed mid-sex to look for a pound coin which he had dropped in the hallway and it rolled into the hallway cupboard. He literally was emptying this cupboard out, standing naked in a big pile of stuff around him. A tent, old rucksacks, towels, the sort of crap a single bloke in his 30s would have in his airing cupboard. Even when I offered to give him a different pound, he still wouldn't come back to bed. He said he couldn't even think about finishing until he had found it.
Again, that sounds like another one of your ex-colleagues there, Derek, that we had a drink with the other night, the other day.
Yes.
Oh, quality.
So, on that note.
On that note.
Yes. So, we have, that's the end of this season, you know, 11 episodes this season, which is quite good going for us.
That's excellent for us, actually.
So, we have, obviously, our first two qualifiers for the UEFA Cup, Europa League, whatever you want to call it these days, on the 29th of June, and then on the return leg, 6th of July. We do not know who we've got yet. We don't know if we're playing home or away or whatever yet. So certainly we will be back with a pre-season pod just before then.
Oh, Derek, I forgot one last thing before we wrap up. I had put out some questions earlier on Twitter, and a few people had got back in contact with me just asking us things to cover, which we have done. But one of the guys, I'm sure, I think that you met him one time in the Loudon Tattoo, Stu, for the We Welcome the Chase pod.
Yep.
He actually posted a question for us, so I'll ask you this one very quickly just now, just to get your opinions and just to let me know. He wants to know who you think should be the captain of the team next season. So that's for Tattoo Stew from the Welcome the Chase pod. Do you think it should be kept Lee Wallace, or do you think that Kashinya will go for possibly one of the new players that he's got in there?
It's a tough one because the captain thing's always a, it's always a slap in the face if you strip a captain. I mean, I think obviously Ryan Jack found that out. You know, he shockingly got stripped of the captaincy for the cup final just because he was leaving. I don't see it being anyone else than Wallace, to be honest. He certainly seems to be, from what the stories get told, he's a captain off the field, but on the field I don't think he offers too much, which is strange. Ryan Jack's obviously a ready-made captain there, same with Bruno Alves. However,
well, that's the player that I think everyone has been maybe thinking about in that role would be Alves, just with his experience and the position that he's playing, you know, at the back. I agree with you, Derek. I think he's a very good captain off the field for Rangers, but on the field, maybe we just don't see it. Do you know what I mean? It's maybe the players would disagree, but it certainly doesn't look as if he's you know, shows that much enthusiasm on the field, you know, to be the captain. And I'm maybe think the same way as you, but you couldn't do that to a player like Lee Wallace. You couldn't strip him of the captaincy, I don't think, just because the fact that he did stick with us through thick and thin, and he deserves his shot of being the captain. So I certainly wouldn't strip him, but I do agree with what you said there. So
So on that note, it's a goodbye.
Yes, and we'll be back very soon.
Sooner than we think.
Exactly. Hey, cheers.
Bye.
Hashtag get in before a Tim.